It is 7:45 on a Saturday morning, this one the 20th of September. Time once again for a wine chat from our friend from Haskell's, Ted Farrell. Ted, good morning.
Good morning, Denny. How are you on this little damp and somewhat dreary Saturday?
You know, I feel pretty good. Thanks for asking. I hope you do, too. And we hoped, well, there's a chance of showers, but hey, it's going to grow stuff. And our highs yet this week are going to be in the 70s all week.
Well, that's just wonderful. And, you know, it's kind of funny with this little tricky weather. You sometimes don't know exactly how to, like, dress for the day. And I did that incompletely and kind of screwed it up yesterday because I was so excited. We just got a brand new wine in. And it was called Inara Pinot Noir. It's a California Appalachian Pinot Noir, literally brand new on the shelves. And I was so excited last night to take a bottle home and open it up and try it. I was, you know, kind of planned a little meal around it. Very excited. But guess what? Because of my improper, I had a short-sleeved shirt on. The air conditioning was still kind of going at the office. I caught a little bit of a fall cold.
Oh,
and what
no.
happened is when I came home and I was a little sniffly, it was truly incredible. I opened that bottle up. I poured myself a glass, so excited to try it. But I realized I was so congested, I couldn't try it. And that kind of switched my whole gear about doing the show today to discuss that simple thing of smelling wine and tasting wines. And, you know, I'd love to talk about different regions and all these different wines. And sometimes you kind of forget we should get back to the basics and step into and learn and teach people how to taste wine.
Yeah.
So it's a very, yeah, you know, it's often overlooked. Some people, you know, you wonder why these critics say what they say, do what they do. A blowhard like me sitting there telling everybody about it. You know, it's really not the case. It's such a simple process. And I don't care if you're Robert Parker, if you're, you know, the King of England or whomever, or just John Q. Public tasting wine, no matter who you are, you go through these particular steps and that's how you taste wine. And the very first step is the sight. What does it look like? So, you know, very simple questions to answer is it a white wine? Is it a red wine? How rich in color is it if it's a red wine? Even if it's a white, is it a real clear Sauvignon Blanc? Is it a kind of deep, rich Chardonnay where you can see that, like, you know, almost straw color to it? And that's just the simple step. Nowadays, you know, that's one of the easier steps because years and years ago, you'd oftentimes pour a wine out and there could be, you know, sediment in there. It wasn't filtrated, you know, modern technology, modern winemaking techniques, excuse me, have really cleared that up. So you don't see as much murk and dank, but, you know, older bottles of wine, there might be sediment. Oftentimes you see that with port. Unfortunately, it's a very popular wine nowadays. Some people like that natural wine that they don't filtrate, and you will see some sediment or a bit of fogginess or a little haze in that wine. It's not as clear, but, you know, nowadays, generally, you'll get a nice, clean wine. You won't see that sediment, but you just look at it and describe it. So that's step one. Step two is kind of the smell or the odor factor. That's where you swirl the wine in the glass and you're developing the bouquet. And so you're combining oxygen with those fruit flavors, and you're spinning around the glass, and then you put the old snot locker in there, take a big whiff, and it's what does it smell like? Now, that's a whole range of description. You know, and there isn't any right or wrong answer. You know, some people might smell a gooseberry. Some people might smell cherry. Some people might smell, you know, there's a gamut. And it's so interesting, believe it or not, the olfactory senses are one of the senses or the sense that triggers memories like no other sense properly does. I remember a while back, I opened up a bottle of wine. And it was kind of a sweeter dessert-style wine, and it brought me back to my youth, to the old Birch's Pharmacy that was right down on Hennepin and Franklin. Because when you walked into that Birch Pharmacy, you had the pharmacy over on the one side, all the perfumes, and then the candy section right next to it. So you had these wonderful aromas, but then you had that background of sweets and chocolates and things like that. And it just literally brought me back to my youth of walking into Birch's to go buy a candy bar. But it was just truly incredible. And that's where, you know, the description portion of that aspect, there's just so much people can talk about. And, you know, that's where there's really sharing going on. Like, I smell blueberries. And usually somebody says that and someone takes a sniff and goes, oh, you are right. I smell blueberries like no one's business. Or I smell this, I smell that. And we'll get into it a little later, too, about when you smell things that aren't so good in those particular wines. And that's where you should draw some caution. Secondly, is actually the taste, the first taste. And that first taste is when you pour that wine into your mouth and it splashes over your palate. And that's where you see only the four things. Now there's technically five things that your tongue tastes. And that is it sweet, salt, bitter, or sour? Those are a little acid too. So it's those combinations in there. Now, you know, in the food world, they talk about the umami flavor where there's that texture to it. But those are the only things that your tongue will taste, is that sweet, sour, salt, and bitter, or acid. And then now, you know, you do play in the umami. Is it rich? Is it texture? And that's the immediate splash into your palate. Now, the next phase, some people call it the savor phase or whatnot. This is where, you know, some wine guys get into trouble at a restaurant. You sound like a broken water heater over in the corner where you're slurping that wine. You have a full mouth of wine, and then you sit and kind of gurgle with it. What you're doing is you're combining those odors, the smell, along with those flavors on your palate. So you're combining that. So now inside your nose, or inside your mouth, sorry, you're tasting that. And so, you know, when my nose was stuffed up yesterday, that's where I could not taste a little bit of that wine whatsoever. It could have been a Pinot Noir, it could have been a Chardonnay. I just couldn't delineate that because my nose was so stuffed up and I was, you know, fighting it. You could get notes of it. It was still a wonderful wine. I could find my way through it, but it was a true, true battle. If I just wouldn't consume it, it would taste like nothing. But that's where you see these wine people slurping away, and you're developing that smell of the wine along with the palate. And then lastly is once you, and that's the best part, you swallow it, and you talk about the aftertaste. You know, is there a little bit of resin in your mouth and in your palate? What does it taste like? Does it linger? You know, sometimes like with those German Rieslings, you feel the acidity dancing on the back of your throat for a little while. You know, oftentimes with a Cabernet, you can really get those kind of dark cherry flavors that hang around on your palate. So those are the only steps. And whether they rate it with 5 stars, 100 points, 10, you know, whatever the rating system is, those are the steps that people, the critics have to go through, and anybody at home should go through as far as rating it. And, you know, what people need to be reassured is there's truly no right or wrong answer if you like the wine or do not like the wine. It's very simple. If you go through those phases, just kind of smelling, seeing, tasting, savoring, whether you like that bottle of wine or not. And again, no right or wrong answer. But one thing we kind of, you know, you can talk about a little bit is sort of the restaurant etiquette or when you're tasting wines. You know, when the sommelier or the wine guy or whoever comes up and pours you that glass of wine, you know, oftentimes, you know, you always see it. Some of the movies, someone pulled the cork up to their nose and smelled the cork. Actually, what people originally did, that you really didn't smell the cork. You were looking at the cork to not only see the condition of it, is it rotten, is it deteriorated, but it was also you're ensuring the quality and also you're verifying that it is. Because if on several corks, if you open it up, you will see a branding of the particular vineyard on there. Where years and years ago, a lot of places, you know, might try to fool you, sell you a very expensive bottle of wine, but they filled it up in the back with a different bottle of wine. And that practice is long gone, but people did do that. And so when a person would open it up and place the cork on there, it was a little bit of say, hey, this is the legitimate wine. Some of the winemakers have gotten creative. Our friends at Frog's Leap put the word rivet on the side, but oftentimes you'll see the crest of the vineyard on that particular thing. And so people really, you're not smelling it per se, you're taking a look and kind of verifying the authenticity of that wine. Now, when you do smell some of those wines, it's a little interesting because oftentimes people don't know maybe what they're looking for. And the one thing you're really looking forward to see if there's some flaws in the wine smelling it. And the big interest or the big problem can be a wine that is corked. Now, a corked wine, oftentimes it's very easy to notice because when you smell that, it smells like wet, damp cardboard that you would have down in your basement after a rainstorm. You get a little water, it's over in your garage. It's a very, very dank, noticeable smell. And usually when you smell that, feel free to send that bottle, that glass or that bottle right back to the kitchen. Or if you bought it at home and you smell that, slide the cork right back in and do not pour the wine out. Slide the cork back in, bring that bottle back, and any reputable retailer will bring it back or send it back to that kitchen. Now, the whole hook, if you're doing it on the retail side, never pour the whole bottle of wine out, because you walk into a store with an empty bottle and say, hey, I didn't like this. And most retailers say, well, it looks like you did. So bring it back so you can prove that there was something wrong with it. Now, you can run into some problems with older type of wine, and I won't translate it in English, but the French call it essence de merde. When you smell some of those wines, and that's a little bit of that barnyardy funk to it. And oftentimes that just means it's an older bottle of wine. It aged a certain way. It's quite delicious. You know, it's like eating a little bit of French cheese. There's, you know, you have to step over that smell, but that's a part of the experience. And quite frankly, what do you think you would smell like if you were stuck in a bottle for 10 or 12 years? Not too great. So there is a little bit of that. You do run into that kind of funky style. But really, if you smell that wet cardboard sort of aspect to it, you'll truly notice it. Slide that cork back in, send it back to the restaurant, and feel free to do it. Even point it out to the wine sommelier or the wine steward, saying, you know, smell it. I don't like this. And some they might say, well, that's what it's supposed to taste like. Well, give me another wine then. I don't like that. So you got to be comfortable with it. But if you follow those quick steps in tasting your wine, it is going to help your experience. And really, you know, you become a pro doing it. So there's a great way to step into that and get everybody back tasting wines.
I know we have to take a break here real fast, but what causes corking of wine?
There is a little virus on the cork itself. You know, cork comes from Portugal, where they scrape it off the trees. It's a natural product, and it's just a little fungus on that, that once it touches the wine, it just adapts to it. So it's a little fungus that's built in the cork.
All right. Send it back. All right. Tell us about Haskell's and what we can find there, which is everything.
You are correct. And on Saturdays, you can stop in all the stores in Haskell's and try some wines. We have our Saturday Taste program going on. Also, you know, I hate to rub it into some folks who didn't sign up. This is the last day of our cruise out on the St. Croix River today. But we have Haskell's all throughout the metro area to take care of your needs. There are Haskell's in downtown Minneapolis with lots of free parking on the weekends. There's a Haskell's right across the Ridgedale Shopping Center in Minnetonka. Haskell's in Highland Village right on Ford Parkway. There's also a Haskell's in Bloomington down in Lowman's Plaza. There's a Haskell's in downtown Excelsior if you want to shoot out on the lake one last time for the season. There's also a Haskell's in White Bear Lake. If you're headed out to the river, you could always stop by Haskell's Stillwater. Right off of 35, there's our Haskell's Faribault location. There's also a Haskell's in Plymouth, or you could stop by if you're headed up north to our Maple Grove Superstore. And if you can't do any of that, always stop by Haskell's.com 24/7, and we'll take care of any of those needs that you have.
We'll do that every time. All right, Ted, thanks so much. Feel better, and let's do this again next week.
I look forward to it, Denny.
Ted Farrell from Haskell's.